What you are listening to is real. The participants are not actors. They are real people with a case pending in podcast court. Hello, I'm producer Peter, and welcome to Cage Match, a roundabout way of meeting Nicolas Cage, podcast court. Today's case is between a man who can free associate his way out of anything, but still doesn't carry enough cash, and a man with a heart on his sleeve who can't get away from a town he hates.
Oh, God.
Peter, how are you gonna sync this all up?
Oh, don't worry about that magic.
All right. That's a Peter problem.
Yeah, it is. I've gotten kind of good at it too, but yeah, it takes me a minute to figure it all out. I know, like the twins, they did that like clapping thing, and it's like that doesn't really super work for me because they still can be off from one another just slightly.
Yeah, I mean, we could all like state our favorite sexual organ in 3, 2, 1, wieners.
I was gonna say wieners.
Perfect. We're in sync.
Chris, you're good. You understand. Wieners win.
Uh-huh.
Yeah,
always.
Chris, how you been since the last time we saw you?
Good. If I recall, we last recorded, I say it was beginning of April, because I believe the March Madness final was going on between UConn and Purdue. I believe somebody had some money on it, I think, or was following the score for some reason or another.
Oh, yeah, that was right. Nick was paying attention.
So
good. Hopefully you won.
Yeah, actually, I won the tournament. So
good. Congratulations. My bracket
was tops.
Yeah, so we're actually going to pay you for being on our podcast.
That's not true. I blew all the money.
As you should, with winnings from sports.
Yeah. It went straight into meat and beer.
Yes, good.
Very
good.
Keto.
Nothing can go wrong when you bet on sports.
No,
that's why it's highly encouraged. Yeah. I also like, though, they should encourage it more. They're a little subtle, I think. If you watch sports, they don't tell you enough that you can bet on it.
Yeah, Michael Jordan is always out there betting on something, and if it's good enough for Mike, it's good enough for me.
That's what I say.
Fair enough.
I think that's what happened with the mustache. Like, that was just a bet that went wrong.
Michael Jordan's mustache?
He had, like, a Hitler stash for a bit.
No, I remember. He had the weird, creepy, like, he did the Hitler stash. He had a pencil mustache for a while. Like, oof.
Pencil mustache, fine. You know, yeah. John Waters has one, so yeah, you're a creep, but...
I mean, if you know that that's your vibe, then it's okay.
And he did Hanes commercials with that stash.
Yes, that's exactly what I was going to say. He had it in Hanes commercials. So
was it the bacon neck shirts, or was it the like underwear? Which Hanes commercials?
What's a bacon neck?
Oh, bacon neck was when...
No, I think it was a bacon neck. I think he was on a plane.
So when your shirt gets worn out and the elastic, it gets all ripply and it looks like bacon.
Gotcha. Bacon, yeah, I do remember shirts. That. I forgot that's what that was called.
Yeah. Yeah. Only in those commercials.
Welcome to our new podcast, Canceled Mustaches.
Yeah. Welcome back.
It would be something like, maybe we could organize some kind of grassroots movement where everybody just has that center mustache. We don't need to call it a Hitler mustache.
You can call it a Chaplin.
Yeah, we could call it a Chaplin, or just a like a
Jordan
dripper stash, or a Jordan.
Yeah, the Jordan.
A Jordan.
Yeah, let's start associating it with Michael Jordan.
We're gonna reclaim.
Let's take it back.
That mustache.
Yeah,
exactly.
This is perfect.
Someone just needs a to bunch do it. Of
mostly white people claiming that mustache.
Yeah, exclusively white people.
Yeah. Oof. This is rough.
Speaking of rough, welcome back to Cage Match: A Roundabout Way of Meeting Nicolas Cage. I'm your host, Sean, here with my co-host.
Nick, you're not here with me. Fuck off.
This is our first remote recording with Sean not here.
Oh.
Or actually, maybe not our first.
Where is Nick at?
I'm in Seattle with Peter.
Yeah, we're side by side right now.
Oh, okay. So this is all Cascadia Cage edition.
Yes. Yep. Yes, absolutely.
I like how you have it set up for me, even though I'm not there.
Well, we have another guest.
We do have another guest coming. Is
that guest in person?
It's cute you think that we put a little memoriam for you.
It's like leaving out a cup for Elijah or whatever.
Oh, there's a mannequin in the mail with my face on it for you guys. Don't worry.
Perfect. That's exactly what we needed.
Yeah.
A studio restroom.
It's for the
Thank
kids,
you.
Really.
Perfect.
It is not for kids. No, it is not.
Also, our producer.
Peter, hello. And joining us again, Chris Koffel.
Happy to be back.
Yeah, welcome back. I'm glad you were willing to join us again for this exercise in insanity.
No, I'm happy that I could also make you send me a billion emails before I respond it and drive you a little mad. Just so you guys know, Peter does a great job tracking people down for this because I am bad at checking my emails sometimes. But he was not deterred.
It's really tough. It's tough because I'm like, how hard do you push on a podcast that is not monetized in any regard? And, you know, how do you make someone come on the show?
Well, I start with one knuckle and I work my way for what?
Get out of here. Starting strong. Yeah, right. Well, good. I'm glad you're back. We had a lot of fun with you last time, so it's nice to have you back for another real strong Cage movie, and one that I think I can't remember in your bracket what it went up against when you did it back in 2016, 2018, but it sadly did not make it the distance.
Yeah, it's really an underrated Cage movie, I think, Red Rock West. I don't think it kind of like slides under the radar a little bit. No one really talks about it that often.
Yeah, well, this came out in 1993.
So just before he won an Oscar, I think?
Oh, it lost to Adaptation.
Mm. Okay, that's fair. That's fair.
Yeah. We can understand that and also not understand it because we killed Adaptation way too early. Early.
Yeah. It met its timely demise. It got thrown through the window of a car.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I got shot. Isn't that fucked up? So at this point, we've seen this movie at least 3 times, a couple more for rewatches. But for the bracket purposes, this is our 3rd time watching it. How many times have you seen this, Chris?
I don't know. Not a ton, but at least a handful. At least 4 or 5. But I can remember the first time I seen it. So did you guys first watch it for this podcast?
Yes.
Yes.
Yeah, so I first saw it, it would have been 2004-ish, so about 10 years after it came out. I used to work at, my first job was at Kmart, so if anyone remembers Kmart.
Sick.
Nice.
And back in, in the early 2000s, this is when, like, big box stores still had, like, large electronics sections with huge movie libraries, basically. They would have a ton, so I worked there, and I worked in electronics. And we had a billion movies, and we would have like all of the major studios would have their own sections. And then we would have these racks that were kind of like owned by independent vendors. And they would be like kind of like the $3 racks where it would just like racks or bins of just kind of random movies. And I'd always like dig through there to find stuff. And a lot of times it would be movies like, you know, there was this movie called Poor White Trash, which is like a kind of like a sort of this dark comedy about some like trailer trash that tries to commit a crime to make money. I vaguely remember it. Jamie Presley played in it, or movies like Zombies Gone Wild, which is directed by the Coen brothers, Cohen. And on the movie, they put a Coen brothers film to try to fool people, I guess. But in there, I found Red Rock West on DVD, and I had never heard of it at that point, and watched it and loved it. And I feel like I'm gonna sound like an old man now, but I feel like this next generation can't find movies that way, because there's something very different from finding like a physical DVD or Blu-ray or VHS or whatever, holding it, going home and putting it in your player and watching it, versus scrolling through streaming and starting a movie. Like,
yeah, just loading up content.
Yeah, exactly. If you're watching something on streaming, if you're not like hooked right away, I think you just skip it and move on to the next thing.
Right.
Yeah.
Whereas if like you have to actually get up and put a movie in, you're probably going to stick with it more likely. So that's kind of how I stumbled upon Red Rock West, and I instantly loved it.
But there's something about like the bygone days of like the bargain bin, or I remember for me and my friends, it was on Friday going to Blockbuster and just scouring the store for something we'd never heard of. And, you know,
yep.
More often than not, we enjoyed ourselves. And if we weren't enjoying ourselves, we'd drink more.
Yeah, different times.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then Netflix, like when the start of Netflix, when they'd actually send you DVDs, watched so much weird, trashy, like Japanese zombie films at that point.
Have you guys seen Guitar Wolf?
Guitar Wolf?
What, you mean Wild Zero?
Oh, that's the one. Yeah, Wild Zero. Thank you.
Oh, Okay.
I own it on DVD.
Fucking fantastic. Do you have it with the drinking game associated?
Yes. You are trashed. You are trashed in 5 minutes.
Absolutely. It's like heads explode, hair gets combed, fire shoots out of something. Like, amazing. What a good fucking movie.
Also, just one of the greatest like line deliveries ever. Ice! Love knows no boundaries! Ethnicity or gender!
That's one of the many movies that's like desperately needing to be upgraded to Blu-ray, because I think it's only been released on DVD, I'm pretty sure.
We should write the Criterion Collection.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So Chris, with Red Rock West, can you give us like a quick 2-minute synopsis of the plot?
So basically, Cage plays, I guess you would call him kind of a drifter. He's just a former Marine who has a bum leg, who's just looking for work. So he drives from Texas to Wyoming, trying to get a job as a roughneck, as a driller, doesn't get it because of his bum leg. And so he goes to the next nearest town, which is Red Rock, looking for work. Someone offers him work. He accepts it, not realizing that, you know, the work is to be a hitman to kill this guy's wife. And then from there, he just gets completely in over his head. Well, he's just a nice dude, just trying to find good, honest work. And things quickly spiral out of control as he gets caught up with the most awful people.
I think the only other important detail was the reason he gets offered a job is there's a bit of mistaken identity as he gets mistaken for President Koopa, the actual assassin who shows up later.
Yeah, they should have known he didn't have the weird spiky hair.
Yeah, lack of turtle shell.
But hey, Texas license plate. I like the movie is obviously has a lot of dark humor, but this very easily could have been like a zany screwball comedy with almost the same exact cast. I think could have done it if they just Cage and Hopper definitely could have played in it. I don't know maybe about Lauren Flynn Boyle so much, but
well, it's interesting. Speaking of the Coen brothers, though, like this as a Coen movie would have been more of that, you know, and it would have been probably a lot darker. But yeah, I think that would be an interesting recasting or reimagining of this movie.
Yeah, well, it's very as we text about this a little bit, but it's very similar. Like Blood Simple has a very similar plot. Another plot that it's very similar to, if people haven't seen it, that I realized so I was watching it today, is Beavis and Butthead Do America is almost the same plot.
Oh, hell yeah.
Where, you know, Beavis and Butthead get it because at the point when Cage goes to, he goes and tells, so basically, right, so Cage is this drifter Marine, mistaken identity, this bartender, the guy who owns a bar says, hey, you know, go kill my wife. He goes, Cage is a good guy, so he doesn't want to kill an innocent person. So he goes and tells her, like, hey, your husband's trying to kill you. And she's like, I'll double it. That's exactly what happens if Beavis and Butthead Do America. Is Beavis and Butthead get offered, as a case of mistaken identity, to go kill some guy's wife. And she offers them double to go do him instead. Someone should program that double feature somewhere. I would go see Red Rock West and Beavis and Butthead Do America. Back to back?
We're going to insert it into the bracket.
Yeah.
If only Cage had been in Beavis and Butthead Do America.
Yeah.
What a shame.
I learned a lot of life lessons from that movie.
There's a lot of Mike Judge stuff that holds up very well that in the time of watching it, you're sort of like, I don't know if this makes any sense. And then you watch it now and you're like, fuck.
It's still good.
Very prescient.
I don't want to sidetrack into Mike Judge too much, but the new seasons of Beavis and Butthead, very good. They've done 2 seasons so far on Paramount Plus, and
do they do the music videos or is that a bygone thing?
They do music videos and like YouTube videos now. They mix it up because of
okay, that's
what
sense.
They would be watching. And they also did another movie, so you should watch the new movie. It's called Beavis and Butthead Do the Universe, and it it explains how Beavis and Butthead get to modern times and still just be Beavis and Butthead. It's good stuff.
I remember seeing like some clips or something from the movie, because doesn't it have like older Beavis and Butthead in it as well?
Yeah, no, they do. They do have some episodes that are like just look at older Beavis and Butthead. There's also like future Beavis and Butthead. There's all kinds of, it's very layered. It's a multiverse sort of situation with Beavis and Butthead.
As we always wanted. Well, one of the things you mentioned, Chris, that I thought was interesting about Red Rock West is like everybody in this movie is kind of a piece of shit, except for Nick Cage's character. And as much as I hate to admit it, the cops are kind of not bad guys either. Like they are a dick to him at first.
The two deputies, right?
Yeah. They're a dick to him at first because they think that he committed a murder or attempted murder. But then afterwards, they're like kind of chill. I like those guys.
Even the nurse is kind of a bitch when she's just like, and walks away.
Yeah, everyone kind of like, fucking sucks.
You suck.
Yeah.
Yeah, the doctor yells at him, and it's like, he brought this guy to the hospital. Like,
yeah.
Yeah,
that doctor's a nerd, so, angry with so him. Fuck him.
He did look like a nerd.
Yeah.
Oh, a doctor looks cool.
Exactly. Yeah.
With slick back hair.
Slick back hair, backwards hat.
Yeah.
Ooh, yeah.
I want John Stamos or George Clooney or...
That's it.
That's pretty much it.
I want a tiny Asian woman doctor because they have small hands.
Okay. Why?
Unpack this.
I'm getting to an age where things need to get checked.
Oh, you're talking about butt stuff.
Yes.
Yeah.
I want a doctor with arthritis.
To get that angle?
I want every like knuckle to just be a little too large.
Slightly different angles.
Yeah.
Nice. Gross.
It's like you know how they would measure speed for knots back in the day? Like how the term, many nautical knots you're moving is like they'd throw a rope out and there'd be knots and you'd count the knots. That's how I'm going to know how my prostate exam is going by how many knots I feel.
12?
That's a great scene in Red Rock West.
Yeah, exactly. Okay, so on that note, what is your favorite scene from this movie?
I love the ending. I think the ending is great. So, you know, as we talk, you know, everyone in this movie is awful except for Cage and the two cops, surprisingly.
The truck driver is not so bad.
Oh, he's okay.
Yeah. Oh yeah, Dwight Yoakam plays that truck driver. Mm-hmm. Yeah, he's a good guy too. He's actually really chill considering Cage did jump on his top of his truck.
Do I look scared, son?
Yeah, no. That's a great little cameo.
It was good, yeah.
Yeah, Dwight Yoakam's had like kind of a good film career, you know, just in little bit roles all over the place. Pretty cool.
It seems like an odd place to lie. Like he got on a truck because, you know, his old woman was after him when he could have just been like, somebody was trying to kill me. I needed to leave.
I think the one about like he's saying that he was trying to run from his wife, I think it works in the context of like this is like a small like hick town, basically. Where guys would always be making jokes about their wives. That's what I'm, you know, that's why they're all at the bar all the time. That's kind of how I took it. But, you know, Dwight didn't buy it entirely. But he liked him. I think he liked the cut of his jib. That's why he didn't kill him.
Yeah.
I love the ending. So towards the end of the film, you know, spoiler alert, it looks like, you know, Cage and Laura Flynn Boyle, who is the wife that he is mistakenly hired to kill, who ends up also being a terrible person. It looks like Cage and her are going to get away with all the money, and they get on this train that randomly comes by this graveyard that they're at, and they're on the train, and it's very clear that she just cares about the money, doesn't care about him at all, and she tries to kill him, but her gun has no bullets. So Cage dumps all the money out of the train, the moving train, and then just shoves her out.
I do wish
it would have been a more aggressive shove. Like I wish it seems kind of gentle and she just kind of lands. I kind of wish she would have went bouncing when she hit.
It would have been cool if he had taken like just a handful of money and threw it right in her face. And then she like, and stumbled back out. Yeah. That would have been cool. And then got like her coat caught on one of those mail hooks. And then she was just dangling there. And can't that'd even touch cool. the money like at her feet.
I also would have been okay with her just getting like caught up in the tires. or the train wheels, I guess, under the tracks would have been okay with me. But I love that he knocks her out, and then he's all beat to hell, and he sits down, and there is just one stack of bills left for him, so he's gonna be okay. Because the whole movie, I wanted him to be done with all of these people, because everyone in it is horrible except for him.
I think that's pretty common. I think he wants to be done with all those people too.
Yeah.
Do you think he went back for his car?
It was a nice car.
As commented on by the guest.
Yeah, the old timer. He knew.
But I was doing some gas math.
All right, what's your gas math?
Oh, I was doing some gas math, and like in Wyoming in 93, a gallon of gas was like 79 and change. Change. So like when he gets $29 worth of gas later on, that's like 36 gallons. That tank is huge.
Well, it's either a huge tank or you like filled up extras.
Like jerry cans.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, maybe it had a secondary tank. The second tank was a pretty cool thing back in the day when you got like 12 miles to the gallon.
Yeah, range extender.
Yeah, I had a pickup with two tanks. It was fucking hell to fill up.
I bet.
Where was the second tank? Like, how'd you fill up two? Is there just a second hole?
There's a selector switch.
Mm-hmm. Oh. So wait, were they double stackers or side by sides?
It was one inside of the other tank.
Ooh, tankception.
It's kind of like just a floating a xenomorph situation. Ooh, nice. Like when I need it, it just comes out.
Perfect.
Yeah. Yeah.
Just bursts out the back of your truck.
Yeah, like my boner.
Oh man. Okay, Sean, what was your favorite scene in this?
I this whole movie, I absolutely just, I'm so enamored with. I do love when he's trying to escape from Wayne, and we get our first real bouts of like action. Wayne like drives off the road trying to make it look like there was a struggle, and gets his like the door slammed on his hand, and like is chasing after him in the woods, and Cage goes tumbling down the hill where we meet Dennis Hopper, who almost like splatters him. And just Dennis Hopper's just so nonplussed about it. Like, you know, it's like, if I didn't get my brakes changed, you know, I'd be cleaning your brains out of the grill, something like that. But just that whole series of events, which really kind of kicks off the rest of his very unfortunate night of leaving Red Rock, coming back to Red Rock, leaving Red Rock, coming back to Red Rock.
I do like how many times that happens. That he leaves and comes back, and he leaves and he comes back.
Yeah, you see that fucking sign so many times, and you're like, oh, this poor bastard. Just get out of here.
Hey, man, he's trying.
They have the welcome sign and the leaving sign. Do you ever see them close to each other, or is it like just one of those things where like you're only allowed to enter in through one end of town?
Oh, they'd be on opposite sides of the road.
Opposite sides of the road, yeah.
Boom, fucking solved it.
Unless you drive like some stupid British person.
Am I coming or going?
I assume the town too is just like you're just like the strip of highway, right? And it's just a couple like there's the ranch, there's the bar, and there's the Comfort Inn's outside the town. So that's it.
I mean, enough that
it's just the ranch and the bar.
Hospital. There was the house that drifters lived in at one point or whatever. So, but yeah, it doesn't feel like a big town. It feels like a couple stoplights, but that's about it.
Yeah, it seems to exist. Yeah. To service the oil workers,
right? Because the population was what, like 1,200 or something
real low. But
small.
Cage was told like, "Oh, go to the bar named for the town, and that's where all the roughnecks hang out."
So but then, like, why is he surprised when Lyle takes him to the bar? Like, no, you should have taken me to the other one.
Well, yeah.
It's like there's literally nothing else here. Sorry, buddy. Do you want a drink at the hospital?
Maybe.
I don't think he was so much surprised. He was just looking for a ride and wound up back in Red Rock. He didn't know Lyle was going to Red Rock. And then, of course, goes to the bar because Lyle's looking for Wayne. And Cage does try and get out of there real quick, and Lyle won't let him.
I do love his escape, though, through the bathroom. And then when he ultimately gets on Dwight Yoakam's truck with that. And there are some really great shots. He gets on, basically escapes through the bathroom, goes up on the roof of the bar, and then he gets like a piece of wood. I don't know my wood types, how big that wood is.
It's like a 2x4.
It was longer than a 2x4, right? It had to have been. Yeah, but it's something bigger than a 2x4. It's like two of Hacksaw Jim Duggan's 2x4s, I guess. So 4x8? I don't know.
A 2x8?
No.
2x8s are a thing. Yeah.
So it's probably a 2x8. And he puts it, and he has to like walk a tightrope across the roof of the bar to the top of this truck, and we see like a great shot of Wayne, who we didn't, I don't think we mentioned this, Wayne owns the bar, but he's also the sheriff in town, who hired someone to kill his wife. We see this shot of him looking around, and we just see Cage slowly creeping behind him in the air. If, like, if he just turned backwards, you would see him. He's not that high up. Like, you don't have to look up to see him.
Yeah, I right. love that shot.
He's as high as the top of a truck.
Right.
There's one thing I love, just a little attention to detail, is when he's on the top of the truck and he, like, knocks on the window to get the truck driver to stop. When the truck driver, like, hits the brakes, the piece of wood falls from the top. So, like, it was still up there.
Yes. I also loved that he pulled the wood back when he got on top of the truck. Yeah. Because obviously if the truck just backs forward, the wood falls down. It would the fall. Whole thing, you know. That is a nice little touch that I think a lot of movies would forget.
So at this point, like, I've seen this movie a bunch, and I still really love it. And I can't quite put my finger on what it is about it. Like, I don't
it's
know,
a banger.
Because it's sort of like, it's kind of ponderously slow paced, but it's also like of a different era. And I kind of think that what I like about it most is that it is reminiscent of a different time in cinema, right? Like, they don't make movies like this anymore. This would be so like fast cut. The music would be like schizophrenically, you know, all over the place. It'd be very, very different movie.
Yeah, it's very much like a neo-noir, right? It's very... It's weird, though, too, because it is a slower pace than what I think when we think of modern films. But it does, like, it gets to things quickly. Like, he pretty early on gets mistaken for the hitman. And mm-hmm. then that first chasing that we referenced, or not chasing, but like action set piece where he's arrested and they go off road. That's like 20 minutes into the movie, I think. It's fairly early on. It's just like a different type of pacing than what we see.
Every scene just sort of exists to push forward that next scene. Like, everything has a point, and they give the scene its amount of time that it's needed to like tell it without rushing anything, but they're not like just cramming a bunch of other stuff in there just because like, oh, somebody would like to see this or that.
And it doesn't have like a million cuts.
Yeah, it's full, but it's full of just the right information.
Well, and thinking about, like, you know, stuff we'd cut now for a film, as opposed to what like this film does, is there's that scene early on where he goes to the gas station. He can't find the gas station owner, and he sees behind the counter just a little box, full of cash, and he's desperate. And you see him think about it, but he won't do it because he's a good guy. And something I noticed this time is he's yelling for this guy who doesn't show up until like for a few minutes. He's got a hearing aid. So I'm like, there's just such little attention to detail in this film that I absolutely love. That, yeah, we don't really see as much anymore.
It's kind of amazing because, you know, these are really important things, and it's the signs of good filmmaking, right? You know, and it's surprising to me that this director really didn't end up doing a ton of other movies. I mean, they did a lot of TV work, but not a ton of cinema.
John Dahl. So he did The Last Seduction and Rounders. He did Rounders, Kill Me Again. But in recent years, he's been doing a lot of, he directed a bunch of episodes of like Manhunt, Evil, Billions, a bunch of TVs, Yellowstone, Ray Donovan.
Well, Yellowstone seems like it would be up the alley of this.
But... Oh, totally makes sense. It's very similar. Well, from what I know of Yellowstone, I guess it's similar. Similar style.
Yeah, I have not seen any of it,
but it definitely takes place in like a country, like Western feel. That's another thing I think it's interesting about this movie is it takes place in Wyoming. I'm not sure why. Like, and the reason I just say that is just because it was all filmed in Arizona. And you could have just made this like a town in Arizona. So I'm just curious. I guess maybe the distance from Texas to Wyoming.
They wanted to show how far he'd traveled, kind of like how desperate he was, because they talk about him driving out from Texas.
Yeah, that's a good point. And you don't drill for oil anywhere in Arizona, so that makes sense.
Also, I just forgot how fucking cut he is in this film. Like, the initial workout scene in the middle of the highway, I'm just like, God damn.
One-armed push-ups with his legs, like, fully spread out in the middle of the highway with a bum leg. He can't be
stopped. We'll be doing some of those for Patreon later today.
Yeah, exactly.
shirtless push-ups. God.
But it is interesting because he's not like doing a bunch of other action shit at that point. Because around this time, it's Honeymoon in Vegas, Amos and Andrew, Deadfall, guarding Tess, It Could Happen to You, Trapped in Paradise. Like, and then he gets cut as fuck for Kiss of Death. So
yeah, he's just about to hit his action stride though, right? Like, he's just coming up on The Rock. Basically, he's like 2 years away or something at this point.
Mm-hmm.
And then obviously, like, his career takes a much different trajectory. Because I can't even imagine. I know this movie got like a theatrical release, but I know it was very small. It had to have gotten a theatrical release. It was on at the movies.
Its gross overall was $2.5 million. You know, opening weekend in U.S. and Canada was $11,000. So
There you go. So,
but that's 93 money.
93 money. So that calls about 40,000, 35,000.
Yeah.
Not a great poll.
Yeah. But I bet it was in like, you know, 15 theaters, like something super small.
Exactly right. Yeah. It wasn't opened wide in 2,000 theaters. You know, it was much smaller.
Yeah.
I know I've talked about this, is just how in Hollywood, we don't really have the same respect for the working actor. You see someone like Nick Cage who just does so much work, and you know, it's kind of scattershot. Some of it's bad, and people are like, he's a bad actor because he takes bad roles. I'm like, no, he just fucking works. Like, again, Michael Caine has been in a lot of shit, but because he's got a fucking posh accent, we think he's fucking like, ooh, Michael Caine.
I mean, I do feel that about Michael Caine.
And Michael Caine's been very open. He's been very open to the fact that he's a working actor and he takes roles because he's working. Christopher Walken's the same way. Like, we don't see him as much now as he's older, but he's talked about like a dude from New York who just needs to work. Like, I'm a working man, so I just take roles to work. There's a bunch of other actors like that. But it's weird. Like, Cage definitely takes more heat for it than other actors. I think it's because of, like, you know, so many clips get, like, this is a movie where he's pretty subtle for the most part, but you could take like two or three scenes, cut him out where he has little moments, and then put those on loop, and people be like, ah, it's normal Cage going over the top.
Well, and that's the thing, like, people talk about how crazy Nick Cage is and how, like, out there his performances are, but we've watched a lot of them, and he has a good freak out, and you know, there's usually one good freak out per movie, but like, it's not like a constant 10.
Right.
So this movie's going up against National Treasure 1. They kind of thesis as to why you think that this movie deserves to continue on in the bracket, particularly over National Treasure, but you don't have to necessarily throw shade if you don't want to.
I do like his last line is adios, Red Rock, which I think is nice as he's riding off on the train. It ends like a Western. It's a very Western ending. Yeah. He's kind of riding into the sunset. The only a specific thing I wanted to point out that we didn't discuss that I just think is very interesting is Cage has excellent handwriting. He writes a note to the sheriff, and his penmanship is superb. It is so clear. You never see that in movies.
Did you see how he wrote his J when he was writing "This is not a joke"? He starts with the bottom loop and goes up and then dots.
Yes.
What the fuck?
It's very interesting.
I don't
Very
like it.
Interesting.
Could just be a serial killer.
He probably is a serial killer.
That's just saving time. Like, if the dots at the top, why not start at the bottom?
That's a good point.
Who dots J's?
I barely cross T's at this point. Who cares?
All the information you need is in the hook of the J. I mean, it's not an L. It's going the wrong direction.
But yeah, I guess I get overall in this movie, I won't throw any shade at National Treasure. I do enjoy National Treasure. But National Treasure to me is like a mid-Cage. It's kind of, you know, it's like very nerdy Indiana Jones. I think Red Rock West for me is like top tier Cage for me. I think it's very high. You know, Raising Arizona is my favorite, as we've discussed on here. And I do love Adaptation, but I think those might have been my top two, maybe when I did my thing. But Red Rock West is somewhere, I don't know if it gets into the top five. I also really love Bringing Out the Dead, which we won't get into again because you guys mistreat it. Bringing Out the Dead.
I love Bringing Out the Dead.
I love that movie.
I think Red Rock West, it's just a great, like, cat and mouse thriller that I would say is deliberately paced. We're not getting hard, crazy cuts. It's very, you know, has a lot of elements of Westerns and film noirs. There is very, like, very harsh lighting. Obviously, it's not a black and white movie, so instead, you know, with, like, the neo-noirs, there's some good neon lights in the bar. There's a really good shot when he's on top of the bar and he's looking down over, and he's against the Red Rock bar sign. It's just a very like engaging, gripping movie that you kind of, every time you kind of think you know where it's going, they do add like a new little twist that mixes things up a little bit, but it all makes sense within the context of the movie. It's also very much it's a very small world where everyone crosses paths. It relates to something else that's happened in the story. And there's a ton of little details like we've mentioned that really stand out the more you rewatch this movie. And it's just a very like restrained Cage performance, and it's balanced really well with, it's nice that he doesn't go like full freak out because Hopper is like at 11 the entire movie, and their scenes together are like a really nice balance. I can't imagine anyone watching this movie and not loving it.
I still maintain from this whole experiment, this movie is the one that like I'd never heard of, but it was kind of the biggest like underdog surprise. I'm just like, oh, this thing nobody knows about is great. Why don't more people know about this?
Yeah, because not enough people worked at Kmart in 2004. That's why.
Exactly.
If you worked at Kmart in 2004, you would have found this movie. It was $3, so I bought multiple copies and gave it to friends. I'm like, you guys should watch this movie. It's great. People can't do that nowadays. It will never happen again.
This movie and Joe are the two that I was like, whoa, these are good movies that nobody knows about or talks about. Joe is a lot harder to watch consistently.
Sure, yeah. I like the art of this, and I think when you kind of implied like this was a different time of Cage, this is very much a cinematic Nicolas Cage. I really enjoy that that take on it. Not your freak out Cage.
Right.
But
I think this is still before like the character of Nick Cage.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
It should be remembered more fondly, and should, you know, this should go in the Criterion Collection.
It should be remembered.
It really should. But it did just get a great Blu-ray release from, I forget, not Vinegar Syndrome, but one of the companies Vinegar Syndrome works with. I can't remember what it's called, but they did like a really like nice like deluxe edition Blu-ray.
Nice.
My copy of this really pisses me off because it's one of those double-sided, like one side is
widescreen
and the other is like formatted.
Yeah.
And they never write this side up for widescreen. Yeah. So you have to do it twice because you're always going to do it wrong the first time. I should just take a Sharpie and write over the...
You should, yeah. This side sucks shit.
Yeah. Hey, write your opinions on this podcast on a bathroom wall. I'm sure I'll see it.
Yeah, take a picture of a bathroom wall somewhere in Seattle or Portland and tell us what you think about our podcast.
Write it right under the big dick.
Big dick. If you're ever in Dante's, write your review underneath the big dick in the men's room. Well, it was really nice talking to you again, Chris.
Thank you very much.
Yes, thanks for having us. Good to be back. I was happy to talk this movie. It's a great one, and I hope more people do watch it, and so you guys are doing the good, you know, putting up the good fight to get the word about Red Rock West out to the masses.
Yeah, well, I'm gonna look for that new Blu-ray of it, and if I can find it, my totally serviceable but not ideal copy of it is gonna go to somebody else.
Mm-hmm. Chris, do you have anything you wanted to pitch?
No. People can follow me on Letterboxd if they want, Chris_Koffel. You can do that. And then, if not, I'll be playing Rocket League as always.
That's right. Right on, man. Well, thank you for coming back on.
Maybe I'll see you around in Portland sometime.
Oh, yeah. We'll cross paths. We'll be the two guys talking about Red Rock West randomly out in public. Because I walk around just screaming Red Rock West. So
you guys one of you needs to wear a shirt that says now entering Red Rock West. And the other needs to have a now leaving Red Rock West shirt.
So every time we'll say it on both sides, like we'll have
correct, yeah,
entering and
then
and
you have
leaving.
To stand opposite, yeah,
and then
yeah.
we walk by each it. Other, yeah,
mm-hmm. yeah,
perfect. I like it.
Yes. And very few people will understand that joke.
It's fine. That's most of my jokes. Of all the horrible things Zack Snyder has done, I will say his like just make Dr. Manhattan like the villain rather than inventing like alien space squids. Makes more sense.
All I know about Dr. Manhattan, he's got a big old hog.
And every time I think about that big blue hog, I think about heavy metal. And when the guy looking down at me, like, look at my dork. Which that movie is still not accessible on streaming.
That's incredible.
It's like, you can watch Heavy Metal 2000, but they don't have just normal heavy metal available for like free streaming.
Right, streaming stuff is so confusing.
Yeah.
The last time I watched Heavy Metal was on Netflix, so it has been occasionally.
Just not often. Not when I want to see it.
Which is always.
Oh, well, yeah.
On that subject, Red Rock West, I don't think is really on streaming. And no. Like 11 p.m. last night, I was like, you know what? Fuck it. Baby's asleep. I'm going to go for it. And then I realized, no, I'm not. I really am not.
I'm not getting into pirating right now.
I mean, yeah, I could have tried to fire up my torrent engine from forever ago. So
it is. It's anyway. It's really unfortunate. I'm sad that you didn't get a chance to watch that movie because it is pretty great.
Yeah.
But yeah, it is. It's tough to find, you know.
Right. The best I could do is watching highlights on YouTube.
Yeah, that's good.
Like, there are loving highlights. Someone's like, you know, best scene in Red Rock West or whatever. And I saw a car jumping across railroad track. Anyway, I don't, good. Hell yeah. I don't want to spoil anything. But I was like, oh, it's one of those movies. Okay. Yeah.
Dennis Hopper gets hit in the face with a statue.
Statue of what or whom?
It was like a horsey statue, wasn't it?
Yeah, I think so.
Horsey statue. Yeah, no. Wayne is a big equestrian.
I love when he's on the phone after that, just to talk about the other movie with the guest who hasn't seen it. Dennis Hopper's on the phone with Wayne afterwards, and Wayne's like, well, did you see where he went? He's like, hell no, I didn't. I was looking at the back of my eyelids.
That line is so good.
Yeah.
It's Dennis Hopper at his best, I think. Well, okay, King Koopa, other than that, but.
Hey, President Koopa, get it right.
President Koopa, not King. It was right. Democratic. We obviously.
Hey, this isn't a democracy; it's a republic.
That's right. Right.
I was gonna say, here's something upsetting, but maybe.
Boy, this better not be another picture of your butt.
No, I was gonna say I'm trying to see because Red Rock West, I can't even find it like to rent or buy on Amazon streaming, mm-hmm. And I was just like, if the Mario Brothers movie's on here, I'm going to be upset. Can't find that either. The live action Mario Brothers movie.
Travesty.
Yeah. If I had been more on the ball, I would have gone to Scarecrow Video, which is like, you can find anything. And I'm sure they would have had like the Criterion edition of Red Rock West or something. But
this movie, yeah, I mean, I said this in the last segment, but this movie does need to be in the Criterion collection.
National Treasure or Red Rock West?
Red Rock West.
Yeah, did you watch the Criterion National Treasure?
Only. Yeah, of course. Yeah.
The true National Treasure. Yeah.
Red Rock West is available on Apple TV, I believe.
Oh.
Okay.
Yeah, you can buy it there. Yeah. But, okay. Yeah.
Again, if any of these movies actually made it to the Criterion Collection, I would vie hard to be able to illustrate that cover. Speaking of National Treasure, that's what we're here to talk about today on Cage Match, a roundabout way of meeting Nicolas Cage. I'm Sean, here with my co-host,
Nick. I'm Nick.
And our producer,
Peter. Hello. And our guest, Ross.
Hey.
Thanks for being here with us.
Thank you. Peter told me, like, it's my responsibility to come in and basically be an advocate for this film. Is that an accurate depiction?
Yes. Okay. We have absolved ourselves of all responsibility.
Other than decision making.
Yeah. Other than being ultimately right.
So it is your task is to sway us to the sweet song of National Treasure.
Alrighty then. Fun assignment, because it's not the Nicolas Cage film that would have like bubbled to the surface first for me.
Okay. One, what is the movie that you would have picked?
I mean, maybe adaptation or like, I don't know.
Never
like,
got that choice.
No, never had that choice. Raising Arizona is amazing. I mean, there's so many, you know, I realized having said that, I should have like come in with like an opinion about what I was going to say, but none of the things he does best get really highlighted in this movie. Like if at some point he had like smeared himself with like blood in the face and like screamed or, you know, whatever, like great, perfect opportunity for Nicolas Cage. And maybe they could have written that into the script somehow. I don't know. Yeah. So having said that, there's some great things about the film, and I'm prepared to make the case, I think.
How much history do you have with Nicolas Cage film?
Like quite a bit, actually. Like I feel like regularly at like dinner parties or whatever, I'm the person who's like, I fucking love Nicolas Cage. And someone's like, nah, what are you talking about? He's a shitty actor.
You're just the drunk uncle who's like making problems. He'll go home soon.
No, so, I know. And like,
have you had this situation? Cause I've had it too at like weddings or like family dinners or stuff where I talk about a Nicolas Cage podcast and someone's like, Nicolas Cage is awful. It's like, what's he been in? And then they're like, what? Okay. He was in Face Off and he was in Con Air and Leaving Las Vegas and Raising Arizona. And they'll like, they'll rattle off five or six movies and they'll be like, wait a minute, is Nicolas Cage good? And I'm always like, yes, yes, he is.
Yeah. Yeah, he definitely is. No, it happens all the time. Yeah. And so my mom and I love him. And I feel like my dad hates him. So like I grew up kind of defending him and advocating for him as an actor. I think it's only one step further to advocate for this film, which is a great film, having rewatched it as a fully fledged adult. I'm into National Treasure, but yeah, I have a long history of loving Nicolas Cage. Someone, I forget who, gave me the book about him, which is called National Treasure, because he himself
is
a national treasure.
Have you read the book yet?
It mainly just sits there and looks great and has a conversation. Yeah. I have kind of glanced at it. Have you read it?
Heads up, Nick and Sean, I bought us all copies of that book.
Aww.
Yeah. So you will be getting those soon when they get to third place books.
I can't wait to find out which of us can't read. Surprise, it's me.
The only other thing I'll say, just by way of like credibility, is one of my favorite artists does a lot of like pop culture art. His name's Brandon Bird, but he has these like ridiculous magnets. They're like big yellow, looks like caution tape, but it says caution, Nicolas Cage. And it has like the sketch of Nicolas Cage. And I've given it to many people as gifts. And if I was like more on the ball, the first thing I would have done with the extra time was order those and bring them for you all. So anyway, at some point.
That's actually a really good way to get us to vote in your favor.
Yeah, we are not above bribery.
All right, great. It is
absolutely cool. But you did not show up with any. So that might be 1 point for Red Rock West. Okay.
Oh my God. I just looked up Brandon Bird and like his Nick Cage sticker sheets are amazing.
I'm so glad that you're enjoying looking at his site. He has some amazing stuff and he's obsessed with like a lot of the stuff I am, like Star Trek, Nicolas Cage, Law and Order, Sears, like the department store Sears. He's like super obsessed with that. He has this whole trading card collection called Sears Legends. And he's gone and like painted different Sears department stores around the country.
It's amazing.
He's so cool. I met him at Emerald City Comic Con in like, I don't know, 2012 or something. And I was like, I'm your biggest fan.
I love that his website logo is Vin Diesel going.
That's the goal.
Yeah. Oh man. Okay. Anyway. Good tip. Thanks, Ross.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
So at this point, why don't you give us the 2 minute summary of National Treasure?
Okay. So just like plot summary.
Mm-hmm.
All right.
No emotional.
Well, I mean,
describe it in color.
Yeah. Scene by scene, color by color.
Like the feelings that I see when I see the film. No, okay, so Nicolas Cage, Benjamin Franklin Gates. Okay, so they kind of hit you over the head with that right away. Like, oh, this guy is like real fanboy of the founding father types. Yeah, he is born into a family that are like the generations long stewards of this sort of, I don't know, secret to unlock a treasure that has been guarded by Freemasons. And I mean, the whole movie is him just like traipsing around. Oh, that's adorable. Dog. Okay.
That dog's name is Benjamin Franklin Gates.
Are you serious?
Yes.
Yeah.
Oh, well, that's another point in favor of National Treasure. This is going to be easy. All right. So Benjamin Franklin Gates, the character or the dog is, they're starting like somewhere north of the Arctic Circle, excavating a ship. I mean, someone had like whispered a clue. The secret lies with Charlotte, which really could mean 100,000 things. But somehow he had such conviction that he's like, I know, based on my historical studies and obsessions, there's this ship that was like lost somewhere in the Arctic. And I'm going to like invest probably many millions of dollars to like go on this expedition to find it. Anyway, he finds it. I mean, it's breadcrumb to breadcrumb to breadcrumb. And it reminds me the most of like, The Da Vinci Code, Like, it's like, I didn't look at the timing, but I'm pretty sure this came out after Dan Brown and Da Vinci Code and everything, I think. I wouldn't be surprised if someone walked in to like a pitch meeting and was like, I got it. We're going to do Da Vinci Code, but with like Founding Fathers theme and with Nicolas Cage, it's the other way around.
Yep.
What about when the book came out, though?
Well, Da Vinci Code book was, it's like 2001 or two, probably. Maybe. Yeah, the movie came out in 2006 and this movie came out in 2004.
Right. But I think the book, yeah, I don't think it's a takeoff of the movie, but I think the book was like sensationally popular in like 2002 or something.
2003.
So, yeah. 2003. So anyway, I don't know if that timing, like, I don't know how long it takes to like make a movie or whatever, but it seemed plausible to me that someone had the Da Vinci Code in their mind and they're like, I know we're going to do that. But also with like a little bit of Mission Impossible and with Nicolas Cage and Founding Fathers. And like, I can see that being a very successful pitch meeting. Anyway, so I digress. You asked for the 2 minutes sort of play by play. But I think, yeah, he starts in the North Pole. Then they have to steal the Declaration of Independence. He's got, you know, he starts with this guy, Sean Bean, as I like to call him. Mm-hmm. I forget his character's name.
Ian.
Thank you. I was like, Trevelyan? No. Anyway, the two of them, they start as like, I guess they're like working towards the same goal. They're working together, but then quickly Ian turns on him. It's like the thief's dilemma or whatever. And so they part ways. And then throughout the entire movie, they're kind of like leapfrogging each other, trying to like always get, you know, one step ahead to get the loot. Or to get the clue. So anyway, yeah, that leads them to the steal, the Declaration of Independence, leads them to break into Independence Hall, where the Liberty Bell was once housed. And he's like, you know, very Indiana Jones also, where it's like, oh, at this time of day, this like beam of light will come in. In this case, it's a shadow. And it like points to this brick that you have to break open and get the special glasses to look at the back of the Declaration of Independence. And so it's a little bit convoluted, but I guess that's the point, right? Because it's like some like super clever Masons were like, we're going to guard this secret so well that only someone who's like fantastically obsessed could ever find it.
Oh, I'm sorry. I just love the concept of like, we're going to guard something so well by leaving secrets on, like, just little tips. Just like,
everywhere. Oh, yeah.
Why not just forget about it? Why not put it inside of a super secret decoder ring?
Right.
Why not shoot it to the moon?
Yeah. I will say, like, if I were going to rewrite the script, one thing that I would find a way to do differently is, like, I think the clues, I guess they require, like, an understanding of history, but they don't require any particular, like, merit other than knowing your history really, really, really well. So like Last Crusade, Indiana Jones, it's like, you got to be penitent, you got to be faithful, blah, 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 blah. And it's like, it sort of like says something about your character. Only someone who has a certain like character can pass all the tests. I don't think that's exactly true in this movie. It's more like you just need to know your history super well. So you could just be like a nerd, but you could be like an evil nerd and then you could go find the treasure, you know?
Yeah, there's no element of mysticism.
Right.
I mean, that is kind of the plot of the second film.
Oh, yeah. Well, so, OK, you have like sight beyond sight because you've seen the second film within the last 20 years or whatever.
Yes.
So I don't remember a damn thing, but
which was perfect for me because I had seen neither movie and I got to see the second one first. I was very confused, but especially because he does that thing where he like is free connecting thoughts, you know, that he does in the Charlotte at the beginning of this movie. He does it when he's in Paris or something in the second movie. And I'm just like, what in the fuck is this?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. When he goes through the whole like iron pen, resolute, yeah. The resolute desk.
Yeah. Yeah, free association solving of a riddle is not the best way, I don't think.
Yeah, right.
But it works for him.
I will say it feels a little bit, in a way, like a superhero movie.
A little bit, yeah.
In this case, like he has almost superhuman level of historical knowledge and like
superhuman
intuition.
Level of dorkiness.
Yeah,
what,
yeah.
What a garbage superpower. It's like, yeah, I know. For my next trick, I won't get laid.
It's kind of like PBS Batman.
Yeah, a little bit.
Yeah, yeah. Go to school, kids.
I was going to say, like, if you just want to change, like, just a few things about this movie, this could be a Carmen Sandiego movie.
Yeah.
I don't dislike that.
Nicolas Cage in a red trench coat, yeah, big floppy red hat.
Yeah.
As long as Rockapella's in it,
Hell yeah, Rockapella.
No, my only gripe with this, and you know, it's pretty well known at this point that I like a tight 90 movie.
That Rockapella isn't in it?
Yeah, that too. I mean, it really should have had that. So 90-minute movie, I think, is kind of the sweet spot for me at this point. You know, we are both people who have children. Mm-hmm. It's like 90 minutes is, you're in the pocket.
Right.
This one is a long 2 hours and a little bit extra. And I just think that, like, drop one of the heisty elements of it. Mm-hmm. One of the things, you know, whether it's the magic 3D specs or something else along the pathway, you trim 20 minutes out of this thing, and it's fucking nice.
Yeah.
You know, it's just, it feels a little long to me every time I watch it.
I think getting rid of the do-good letters
would
solve a lot of these problems.
Well, especially because it was like, well, we had them, but we gave them away.
Yeah. Pointless.
Fuck you.
And they never really explained why they had them in the first place. You kind of have to just come to that conclusion later. But I mean, we've talked about this. I think all Brockheimer films are like too overly long.
Totally.
They are.
There's actually another element that didn't do that much for me. And that was Harvey Keitel and like the FBI in general. I get it. Cause it's like, you go from having one opponent, like he's up against Ian and they're racing, you know, against one another. And then it's like, oh my God, there's a third character now that's like vying and like adding pressure from another angle. But it didn't actually really enhance things for me that much.
Here's kind of what I think, because I like Keitel. I think his character is nice. I think that he's a fun, interesting aspect, but it is lost. And I think if you cut some of the other shit and make him more of a character that has value, then there's something to it. But you're right. You could probably just cut him out entirely.
Yeah, it seems like a weak moment at the end when you're like, oh, he's a Mason. It's like, well, you could have played up the masonry earlier on.
Way earlier.
With him being wearing like, that ring?
Yeah.
Yeah. Hello.
But yeah, I mean, I don't know. It feels like you could have made him more adversarial or like more of a roadblock than just being a legal.
Right. Like, oh, fuck. Someone's got to go to jail.
Yeah.
Peter, the producer, sorry, boss Peter, asked me to do a 2-minute synopsis. In about 8 minutes, I like wandered off the path. I got us about 30% through the. Anyway, I don't know if you need to know all the plays, all the blow by blows, but ultimately what they like. They find the treasure. It's like in some tomb in Trinity Church in New York. And they convince Ian, who's like has them at gunpoint at this point because he's like been hot on their heels. And they convince him that the next clue is in Boston. And so that was like a good twist, I think, because like you feel like, oh, they hit a dead end and they're like, oh, no, they're fucked. And then Ian leaves them there to die or whatever. In fact, they're like, oh, no, there's actually more down here. And then they find the treasure.
And you have Riley Poole being the audience surrogate, being like, we're fucked. We're dead down here.
It's like, exactly.
Not so, Riley, with your big fucking jeans.
Right. I guess it just ends with them being like, happy ending. They have all the money. They gave it all to charity. They're good guys, but also they get 10% of like, whatever, $100 billion.
They took 1%.
Right. 1%.
Because Riley was salty about only getting half of 1%.
Yes.
Why did that fucking idiot buy a dumb car with his half of a percent?
Because he's a fucking idiot.
That seems like exactly the Riley thing to do. And it sets up the joke in the second movie.
It does. Yeah. In the second movie, he has no money and he has his car repoed.
Oh, so.
Or just driving that convertible around with the cardboard cutout and the boxes of his books that nobody buys.
Yep.
I do love the Skyrim-esque logic of like the treasure room and going through this crazy like trap dungeon only to have a back door.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
That's the first thing they do. They always cut out a ventilation shaft.
Right.
And then, you know, hide it with more secrets.
Well, and it seems like the back door... this is maybe getting a little in the weeds, but like the front door, there was like this super precarious like catwalks and like some like wooden and rope elevator that's hundreds of years old. The back door was just stairs.
Yeah. And direct to the treasure.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah.
Like if somebody just misread the first clue or that last clue,
right.
They're like, oh, OK, well, it's this one. And then they go in. Oh, well, yep. There's the treasure.
Look
okay.
At that. Yeah.
Hike it up on out of that single flight of stairs.
You could bring one bit of scaffolding in there and you'd be fine.
Yeah. Hell, you could put like a U-Haul ramp down from where that thing came out and you'd be fine.
I think I complained about this last time in terms of just how much wasted time there is in this movie, but it still bothers me that they're trapped down there. They find a secret room, but it's empty, only to find a second secret room where the treasure's at. Like, just cut the middle bit of everything in this movie, and you have a tight, you have a tight film.
Yeah. You don't have to have him jump off the fucking cruise ship, you know? Yeah. You could definitely trim this movie up, and it would be a much more interesting flick.
So I've never been to, I think it's in Turkey, where you can get those, like, ice cream cones. You've probably seen videos like,
and someone, the guy's a dick.
And the guy's constantly, like, fucking with you, where he, like, takes the cone away, and, like, there's a cone nested with another cone. All you have is a cone with no ice cream. And he's like, oh, just kidding. Whoa, whoa, whoa. Like that, over and over and over again. And, like, initially it's kind of thrilling, and they're like, okay, enough is enough.
Give me the fucking ice cream.
And that's sort of how it feels with the movie, too. It's like, it's just too many layers of that.
I saw one of those videos recently where, like, they do that, and then they take the ice cream away, and the guy's just left with a cone, so he just eats the cone. And the ice cream guy's like, what the fuck? So he gives him, like, another cone, and he just eats that, too. Like, that is absolutely. And so he, like, ends up just giving him the ice cream. He's like, no, go away.
You're ruining my fucking Instagram.
Yeah.
I was going to say, I mean, despite how much this movie does drag, and it is long, I still enjoy every minute of it. I still think this is a fun Nick Cage movie, and I like Riley. I like Abigail. I like their little dynamic. I think, by and large, for all the, like, minor flaws this movie has, it does what it does very well, and I still think it's great.
Yeah, individually, all the elements of it are set up pretty cleverly, and it is engaging to watch.
Sean Bean as a villain, I think, does a really good job. I don't care for Patrick Gates' character. He doesn't have a lot to do. John Voight. He's also,
I just don't care for John Voight at this point.
Asshole, but yeah.
Oh, is he an asshole? Like, you mean in real life?
He's just kind of a dick.
He's a weird, like, he's a weird conspiracy theorist in real life. He's like a Trump fucking.
Maybe he started with this.
It all began with National Treasure.
Okay. Now, I do love a conspiracy theorist. So.
I mean, you love a Sean Bean, though.
Ugh.
You love any bean.
Beans.
Any bean flick?
Yeah.
Any... Sorry. This...
Did you listen to our podcast?
No, I didn't.
Very on brand for us.
Okay, good.
How have we never thought of bean flick?
Next podcast.
God damn it. Ross, you're fired. Get out of here.
Oh, I've done my job. I know I'm supposed to be here as the advocate. The other thing that
you can talk a little shit.
Okay. The other thing I don't love about the movie, just watching it 20 years later, I feel like Gates' character, Benjamin Franklin Gates, that is like, he's a little two dimensional. And he's also very, like, he's kind of like cocky. Like, he's like, he knows everything. And he's very patronizing, especially to Abigail. Like, I in rewatching this scene last night, and maybe because it was late or whatever, and I was just like, man, he just, like, keeps talking down to her. Like, she just got, like, shot at and all this stuff. And he's like, you're too excited. Calm down. And then I'll talk to you. He's kind of treating her like a petulant child.
Up.
Yeah, exactly. If you'll shut up, I'll do this. And I don't know. I'm going to love that. If they were going to do a remake, you know, like a woke remake in 20 years or whatever, with, like, Timothy Chalamet or something, I bet they would do it a little. They'd handle that aspect of his character.
That part has not aged well, and I always forget about it.
There's talks of a National Treasure 3, right? To me, I think a National Treasure 3 concept is actually pretty good. Like, if you get some of these original people back into it, and you have Bean be the villain again in some sort of, like, you know, cat and mouse game, that's kind of good. Like, I like that idea, you know, up the tech, you know, all that kind of stuff. Because it's a lot of that, like, Riley Poole is a hacker, you know, like, whatever, dude.
Right.
Also, just, can we talk about how great of a sidekick Riley is? He, like, serves all all the purposes of, like, an early 2000s sidekick.
Yeah, he's great in this film. And I love how they just don't know how to handle him in the second film, because they just, like, don't need a tech guy. Or, like, they've replaced him as a tech guy. I can't
pretty
remember
much,
the second one as
I
much.
I think they just don't need it as much. Like, most of it they do at the Library of Congress or something, you know? It's like, oh, we just went and got a book.
Yeah. No, I do think he's a perfect, like, archetype of a sidekick from that era. Like, he's techie. He's, like, clearly really smart, but also, like, a little bit, like, bumbling. And, like, clearly, you know, he buys that Ferrari or whatever, and he's, like, can't get it in the right gear. Like, it's just... He's so the comic relief, but also, I don't know. He's got, like, huge skill set, actually.
That's very wide,
helpful. Yeah.
wide range of uses.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. He earned that 0.5% for sure. He sure did.
Yeah. No, Riley's great. I love Riley as a character. He's terrific. He's fun. Mm-hmm. He's what the movie needs most at a lot of points. It's like the surrogate for the audience where he like stands up and just says, oh, this is fucking ridiculous.
Yeah.
You're right. It is. Yeah. Now put on your JNCOs and get in there.
My favorite Riley moment is when he has the fucking handheld camcorder with the green laser on it. But it's just like duct taped on there. Like that would look so fucking red flag for anybody who's suspicious. Actually doing any security.
Like a federal building.
Yeah. Right. Yeah.
That guy's up to no good.
Yeah. Favorite scenes in this movie?
Yeah.
Oh boy. My favorite scenes are, I love the water bottle scenes. Like the importance of water bottles in National Treasure just kills me. Like, oh, I'm going to pour water on this snow and reveal that I found the Charlotte like buried under 6 inches of snow. Yeah. Or like, oh, we need to look at the clock on the back of this hundo. I better put a water bottle against it for a magnifying glass. It's like, oh, Jesus, fucking water magic.
And they do the same in the second movie, too. Like when they have to pour water on the rocks to like reveal the secret note.
Oh, my God.
To find
I forgot
the eagle
about that.
Or whatever it was.
With Helen Mirren, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
So dumb.
Water bottle magic.
That's cool. Water bottle magic. It does seem like you. And since you commented on the Charlotte, yeah, it was conveniently close to the surface.
It was close to the surface, and like they managed to approach it from the angle that like the little placard is like perfectly readable too.
Yeah.
Like, oh, okay. Great.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, they were lucky, and that was right after the. I think Riley says something like it's an unlucky day or something.
Oh, oh
yeah,
right. Because his shoelace broke.
He broke a shoelace. That, you know what? That would be top of my list to cut, actually. Just cut that. I know it doesn't get you much, but like those 12 seconds, I didn't need that.
It's true because it doesn't actually play out for him at all. Like if he had superstition the rest of the movie, right. It'd be one of those things where it's like, oh, Riley, there you go. But yeah, it does nothing.
Aside from being generally a Debbie Downer on a lot of situations.
I was gonna say that was kind of my take on that,
because I mean you're right, Cage is so optimistic the entire movie, and even Abigail gets kind of into it, but Riley has to play that sort of like, oh, what are we doing, this is a bad idea, mm-hmm. sort of counterpoint, which mm-hmm. what a fucking rough role to play.
That's true.
How long until we get there? I'm hungry, this car smells.
Yeah,
I really like the on the Charlotte in the beginning when Nick Cage is like doing the iron pen, a whole thing. And the one guy's like, prison. And Riley just like, avocado, what? I can say words too. Yeah.
We all know how to free associate.
Yeah. Yeah.
I learned it from the best.
Yeah. I think my very favorite moment is they're held captive and I think it's in the Trinity Church before they've gone down into the crypt or whatever. And they're talking to Ian, and John Voight is there, Patrick Gates. And at some point, Benjamin Gates he's saying something like, well, this is the clue. And then that's what it's going to lead us to, this next crypt or whatever. And then you can hear John Voight just like very, because he's been like such a Debbie Downer. And he's like, it's just going to lead to another clue. Like he's just in the background and he just kind of shouts it out. But it's actually probably the most realistic moment of that movie is just the way he like fits that in, that like negativity. I rewound it and watched it several
times. That is actually a pretty good moment.
Pretty funny.
Yeah. Yeah. I was watching this on 2-speed at that point because I was like, I need to just get through with this movie. And it just is even funnier in that way.
Yeah.
It's a clue.
Yeah,
I will say one thing I do love about this, and this happens in a weird amount of Nick Cage movies where the movie is just like, and we're done, because the way they deal with Malcolm in the end is just like, cops show up.
You mean Ian?
Ian, yeah.
Are you thinking of Ian Malcolm from Jurassic Park?
Yeah.
Usually.
Yeah. Always.
Mm-hmm. Nature always finds a way.
That's true.
Do, 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 do. Still best on bad recorders.
Yeah, anything on bad recorders is pretty funny.
That's true. I guess I'll just say, in summary, for me, lots of good puzzles in the movie. I feel like that part was well written. And again, to bring back the comparison, like I read the Da Vinci Code and like the characters and dialogue are trash in that book and in the movie. But the puzzling is like cool. Right. Like that's what sold it.
You didn't like Tom Hanks's hair?
I'll rewatch it on 2X and see what I think about the hair. Yeah.
It's fast.
Much faster.
much faster. Yeah, no, I mean, but that like was a huge part of what made that franchise successful. And I feel like similarly in this movie, like the puzzles they came up with were quite interesting, I think. Granted, I don't know much about those deep cuts of history, but like, I guess I was bought into it as it was happening. Like, oh shit, it was right there. I didn't see it all along. Like, that's how I felt watching it. And so in that essence, I guess like the puzzles and Nick Cage's like really superpower, like it did feel pretty cool. Like I was whisked away on that journey with him. As a side note, I watch, I've gone through phases of my life where I go to sleep every night with YouTube on my cell phone playing conspiracy theories. I don't know why I find it so comforting.
It's like, this is incredible. Like, do you wake up starting to think about like believing them? Like maybe
skull and bones run everything.
Yeah. The pigeons really are drones.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, I guess there's like some, honestly, conspiracy theories are a little bit less fun this close to an election. But there have been times, like maybe when the world was like a safer place, where I felt like really good about just the sort of like wonder of it all. Like, what if? There's like all these secret layers upon layers upon layers. So I think there's like a certain magic in that, and tapping into that in this film is great.
I think we should probably like collectively start getting into international conspiracy theories. Like, what are the Canadians really worked up about? Like, what's going on in Turkey right now?
Damn.
Well, maybe that's not one I want to get into, but I think other countries, other developed nations could provide. Yeah, like
what's Finland got?
Oh, yeah. Oh, that's right? Weird.
They've got some weird shit.
What are they putting in that like white fish? That's really.
Are you talking about lutefisk?
Yeah. Is it? It's fucking with the children, man. Lutefisk, not for my kids.
I don't know if Finns eat lutefisk. Sorry, that's Norwegian and Swedish, I think. But
yeah. They probably do.
That's
but
close.
They go to like a Norwegian restaurant.
Right, maybe right. The Finns just know.
Maybe they know.
Why aren't the Finns feeding them lutefisk?
Why does Finland have no lutefisk?
I think this the sad part about if we were to go look at other countries' conspiracy theories is there. I think a lot of countries aren't as just in terms of teaching its masses not to think critically. We are the perfect amount of dumb to really believe and spread things like flat earth and shit like that. We live in a nice microcosm of idiots in America. Whereas I think you look at Canada or other countries, that education system doesn't suck and it just starts getting kind of sad and dark.
Oh, like a little more racial and creepy versus just like we're dumb.
Right. Yeah. Well, I feel like that's another point for National Treasure. Cause like that is the wonder of these conspiracy theories. It's like it's an escape. No, I do wonder, like, I think other countries maybe don't, they probably have conspiracy theories. I'm sure they do, but I wouldn't be surprised if they feature less prominently in the like national consciousness, because they probably can look to the United States as the source of a lot of messed up things in their lives. Whereas if you're in the US, then you want to be like, it's the government, man, they're hiding it. But like, if you're in Finland, you're like, fucking Americans, they are ruining it for everybody. I don't know.
We are the Elon Musk of the world.
You're the Finns like, reindeer. Mm-hmm. Fuck reindeer.
Yeah, exactly. What even are they? My, as a brief aside, like, I've always wanted to get a flat earther in a room with a hollow earth theorist. And just like see what they come up with. Like, it's possible. Like, I mentioned this, someone was like, pita pocket earth, man. It's obvious. It's just like shaped like a pita pocket.
It's flat and hollow.
And shooting through the sky.
Just rocketing higher and higher. Yeah.
That's how it goes, man. Ice wall.
It's awful. It's all falafel under so much crust.
Too dry. I need tzatziki.
I need the juice.
Yeah. Okay. If the earth is flat, how deep does it go? Like thin crust, medium crust, Chicago style?
Right.
My immediate reaction to you saying that was how big that dick?
Yeah.
How deep does it go?
How many knuckles deep is our planet?
Right. How gnarled are those knuckles? How arthritic? All right, Ross. So give us your final pitch for why you think that National Treasure should advance in our bracket and go up against whatever it would hit next, which is it would go up against Con Air.
Oh, okay. All right. So I think, as I've mentioned a couple times, this is in a way a superhero movie because I think he's not a totally realistic character. Like, he's an archetype of someone who has, like, I don't even know what his job is. How does he make money? His whole life, he's just been obsessed with history and whatever. And he's just there, like, with, he's prepared for whatever, 40 years or something for this moment of like searching after this treasure. And so I feel like it's cool that it, in a way, the movie is glorifying superheroes that are, or like superpowers that are not 100% fantastical. Like, he's not like, he can't like punch through a brick wall or whatever, but he uses his mind. So I think that's like, I think that's a cool thing. Like, his determination, his optimism, his, he's done his homework. And this is like the sort of utmost extension of that. And that's a cool thing to showcase for people. And yeah, I think there's like a lot of whimsy and magic in all of the puzzles and everything in the movie. And so it's well written in that way. Most movies from 2004 on rewatching are not that fun for me for the most part. And so I think this movie holds up. Like, it was a blast, honestly. It's got all the like Mission Impossible cool stuff, like all the puzzling. I think it's got a lot going for it. It's a strong contender.
I had to look to see when Tokyo Drift came out. It was 2006.
I would have put that earlier in my brain.
I would have thought so too, but that might be, well, I guess I could look up when Too Fast, Too Furious came out.
Yeah.
I still think they really fucked up changing the name to Fast and the Furious from its original title.
What was the original title?
Race Wars?
okay.
That was the original title. This is not a joke.
My wheels were turning. Wait, that's not a joke? I was like, that joke was a good joke.
I can't tell. Honestly, I'm going to go home and watch some real Race Wars. I'm going to throw on the old Race Wars today.
Well, am I wrong? In one of the movies, they go to this big like desert like rally racing event, and it is called Race Wars.
Yeah, they go to a race war, mm-hmm. Yeah, in the desert.
Oh, yeah.
Just before they drive through a false canyon wall or some shit like that. Yeah. And then they're underground, and there's like wooden beams, and they're like trying not to slam through everything.
This is Mario Kart.
It's so fucking good. Actually, the takeaway from this episode should be go watch Fast and the Furious, all of them.
Yeah, all of them as quickly as possible. Yeah. 2X, 4X.
You've got 2 weeks from the moment you listen to this to the moment that we come back and I check on you all again, individually.
All of our listeners.
Yeah, I'm going to be sending out cards.
Did you watch all Fast and the Furious?
Including
if
the Hobbs
and Shaw. What happened in number 7, bitch?
Yeah, there'll be a QR code that links to the next episode, and that's the only way you get to hear from us ever again is if you've listened to all of them.
Oh my gosh. Daddy's gotta go to work.
Yeah.
Easily the best quote. Then he shatters his cast with his own muscles.
And God, so good.
Interestingly, another movie series that I watched to completion through COVID was the Hellraiser movies. And if you count the remake that came out on Hulu, there's 11 of those movies.
That's a lot. Wow. That's a lot of puzzle boxes.
That is a lot.
Hell of a lot. But the sequence, like, you can, again, it's like very linear. They're like, okay, the first movie is like set in a really small setting. It's like in the attic of a house. And the next one, they go to hell. Then the other one, hell comes to earth. That's Hellraiser 3, Hell on Earth. And then the fourth one, it's like they're literally in space and time. So how do you trump space time, right? And the fifth one is like they're in this guy's soul, basically.
Like, oh, I was like, gonna say, my joke was gonna be it's like inner space, yeah. His body.
Yeah, yeah,
okay.
Yeah. And then after that, it just goes totally off the rails. But I mean, it's like you can see, like,
that's where it goes off the rails.
Yeah. I mean, they drop precipitously in quality after four.
But every horror franchise eventually has to go to space. Jason X, there's Dracula in space. Like, they all have to go to space eventually.
No one can hear you scream. Is it always nighttime in space? Does Dracula have to worry about that?
Oh.
Anyway. All right. Well, thanks for being here, Ross.
Thank you. Thanks for having me. I said everything I can about National Treasure.
And other things. Anything you want to plug? You mean like other Nicolas Cage movies or like the Hellraiser franchise or
no, yeah. just anything?
In your open platform.
I mean, okay, I've been going really deep on Clive Barker, the originator of Hellraiser. So he wrote the novella, The Hellbound Heart, that the film was based on. And then as the legend goes, I haven't really like fact checked this, like, because he had never directed anything. And someone's like, we're going to make a movie. You can direct, right? And he was like, oh, yeah. And then he went to the library and there were like two books on film directing. And one of them was checked out. So he got the other one. And then he's like, he's a director. Anyway, so, but I've been going deep on him, like really quite deep. I've read a bunch of his books. I watched obviously all 11 Hellraiser movies. I think there's a series that's going to be coming out. He's also a phenomenal visual artist. In my opinion, I really like his art. And so one of his books, he has a whole series of these like young adult fantasy horror books called Aberrat. And he painted like hundreds of full-size paintings that are in the hardcover version of the books. Hmm. And so I've been kind of getting obsessed with it. And I was in Portland not long ago and I went to Powell's and I found the first book, which I had already owned, but I loaned it to someone and didn't get it back. And I was like, I'll see if I can get another copy. And I found an autographed one that was not only autographed, but he had hand-drawn like a picture in it. And it was like $25. I was like clicking my heels going out of there. And then that prompted me to start searching like, well, could I just like own some of this man's work? What would that, anything's possible, right? With enough, like throw enough money at it. And I found like the Twitter account for his personal assistant. Like I found a link where you can buy his original. Right, anyway, so next time you talk to me, there's a solid chance I'm going to own like some like original Clive Barker art. I've been reading his books. Anyway, it's a whole rabbit hole. I feel like I could do a podcast about
it. So your plug is Clive Barker.
I mean, I guess so. Yeah, cool.
Yeah.
You said anything, so I don't know.
I did. I mean, yeah.
I can also plug.
I give like, you open platform.
I know. Yeah. I know a good conductorless chamber orchestra that I play in with Peter's wife. Anyway. Yeah. So that's it. That's everything.
Yeah. That's awesome.
That's awesome. I'm excited for you and your Clive Barker adventure.
Thank you.
And I'm sure there will be some Clive Barker movies playing in my house.
Oh, yeah. For sure.
As soon as my girlfriend hears this podcast.
Yep.
Nice.
There we go.
Nice.
Cool. All right.
That'll do.
So here we are, reconvened.
It's been so long since I've seen you guys.
How was your pee?
It was fucking weird. Like it was somewhat surreal, but a lot of fun for like, you know, to wake up on Thursday, like second night. In a new city and just being like, man, left all my friends behind. Like it's, you know, it's going to be weird starting over. And then I hung out with Nick.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, what'd you guys think?
You know, I think these are still two good movies.
I mean, they better be this late into the bracket.
It's a good point.
I think Primal still would have been better suited. I still think it. I'm not dissuaded.
You're not right.
But I'm certainly not wrong.
Oh, we were wrong about this. Yes.
Speaking to the arguments made, I think Chris Koffel had some really great things to say about Red Rock West. It's a fantastic film. It's got like just a really great pacing that doesn't leave anything behind and, you know, doesn't move too slowly at the same time. Ross's takes with National Treasure, you know, it is the clues, the mystery, that's by far the best part about the film, and they are really well done. Somebody had a good time researching three things to make that movie happen. I think that's about all the history that really went into it. Let me Google Benjamin Franklin. Oh, okay, I learned that he wrote some letters, and that's cool.
Yeah, teenage boy letters as an old lady.
Yeah,
cool.
That's so cool.
I would say based on like their arguments, yeah, Chris had nothing but glowing things to say about Red Rock West, and it, you know, I think we all kind of decided like this needs to be remembered better, and this kind of is a lost classic. Whereas even though Ross loves National Treasure, it was much easier to kind of like poke holes in it and be like, yeah, this isn't great. This was fun, but and. The clues and the mystery is really what holds that movie, is the best part of that movie. The problem is it's glued together with just fine action flick in between.
Yeah, I mean, I really like National Treasure. I think it is a fun movie. I think it's an enjoyable time. I want it to be much shorter, and I would have been going to the mat for it more, but it falls prey a little bit to being produced by Disney, you know, like a grittier, different style National Treasure movie might be more fun and more interesting. But you're right, Sean, I think like loose action movie as the glue is not the best.
I think I have fallen asleep every time I've watched National Treasure, and I try really hard not to, but I think I do just like at some point kind of doze off. Like this watching, I dozed off shortly after they went to find the brick, and then I came back into it at some point. It's a good movie. I'd show it to select crowds. I can't say that I would say like show it to anybody, because some people are just not going to be interested in this sort of thing.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, it seems pretty easy at this point, but do you guys want to just make it official, or do you want to talk any more about it?
1, 2, 3, butt stuff. Oh, well, you were supposed to say it together.
How many knuckles?
Yeah, 3.
Are you going 4?
Primal. Or they're just waiting to see how long I can keep this going.
Don't.
There's
don't
a finite
keep,
amount.
Don't let Nick keep going. Save me, Sean.
I just want to see if you guys thought I'd like froze.
No, we knew you didn't. Your smile was getting dopily wider.
Yeah, it was just gradually creeping around the microphone.
You could not hide the fact that you were very pleased with yourself.
No. Oh, good. Now I don't have to touch it ever again.
Oh, what are you, Joe Biden? You can't be biting everything you see like that. Okay. So this is right before the election and it's right after Halloween, but I do have to say I loved the photo of Joe Biden biting a baby dressed as a chicken. Like, what a fucking weirdo president. Yeah.
I mean, that is super weird. Did you see Trump
fillet the microphone too?
Yes.
What a weird time we live in.
Oh man.
I hate it. Red Rock West wins. I want to be off this planet and off this podcast.
You can probably get one of those things. So
so my vote is still going for Red Rock West. It moves right. I mean, it's the right length of film for what it is. It's every scene serves the purpose of the film. I think it's just a terrific movie, and it absolutely like two hands above National Treasure.
Yeah, I think in terms of known Cage films, like this is the one that keeps going. This is the underdog. It's going to go up against Con Air for the final action spot. So that's pretty exciting.
And, you know, National Treasure just suffers a bit from pacing, definitely in length, and could have used some more thoughtful edits.
But that's not why you go to a Bruckheimer film.
I'm struggling to find out why I go to Bruckheimer films at this point.
This podcast, mostly.
Yeah, I don't. That's about it. Yeah, I don't think I like any Bruckheimer stuff.
Do we have any Bruckheimer stuff left?
Wait, no. Is Con Air Bruckheimer?
No.
No. Then no.
Okay, perfect.
Yeah.
Then I no longer have a need to watch Bruckheimer films.
Yeah. Take that, Jerry.
Yeah. Fucking cry into a pile of money, why don't you?
Yeah, enjoy your good life while we gripe about you. You fucking dick.
Yeah. Stuff a hundo in your ears so you don't have to hear my opinions.
All right, any final thoughts?
Just go watch Red Rock West. It's great.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Try and figure out a way to find it. It's on Apple TV if you want to buy or rent. Outside of that,
There's a Blu-ray.
You know, it's going to be cheaper to just find it on Amazon or some other, like,
the actual hard copy of it.
Yeah. And just watch it.
Yeah. Get physical media.
It'll be faster and cheaper.
Right. Because who knows if you rent something digitally, if you can actually maintain it.
Well, so. And you know, every once in a while, you have internet outages, or you have, like, maybe you move and internet's not the first thing you get set up.
Watch
a hard DVD or a Blu-ray.
Absolutely. Yeah. Red Rock West. Everyone should have it. Mm-hmm. Put it in your collection.
Worth $30.
It's actually more expensive on DVD.
I know my copy of my French import of Zandali was over $30. And if I had to choose, well, no, I'm not going to tell you which one I would choose if I had to choose one DVD to be in my.
I love that movie so much.
God, I love Judge Reinhold.
Judge Reinhold, all the Zydeco music, everything. It's like, it's so fucking good.
Steve Buscemi for no reason.
Yeah, right.
It always comes up.
Much like in Con Air.
Yeah,
right. Yeah, for no reason, right? Garland Green.
did nothing wrong.
All right. Well, thank you all for listening. You can find us on.
All right. Well, thanks, everybody.
Hey, thanks, everybody, for listening. Hey,
thanks, everybody. Let's do it. Can we do it in a round?
Sure. Sean should start because he's on the audio delay. Thanks, everybody.
Thanks, everybody.
Thanks, everybody.
God damn it. Thanks, everybody.
Thank you all for listening. You can find us on social media, cage_match_pod. You can support us on Patreon at cagematchpod. Thank you to our Sparkle Buddies, Josh, Sean, Josie, Rico, Matt, Adam, and Bill. And to our cage dancers, Ira, John, Freeman, Lance, Nathan, and Cameron. We really appreciate the support. You are helping us keep doing this.
Yeah.
So thanks.
This is your fault.
Yeah. Take that to the grave.
Yell it at your neighbor. Bye bye.
Bye bye.
That's true. Everyone in Portland does look like Nick.
Oh, my favorite part about this is the sun has blown out all of your color. So you, I know, just you look do extra look extra white.
You are like powder white, yeah, in your video.
Ooh, yeah. What kind of albino magic have you got?
Yeah. Can you electrocute anything? Do you channel lightning? What do you got?
Like powder? Yeah. Is that what that's a
reference to? I love a good powder reference.
Who doesn't?
Don't hear them every day.
Why don't you slam those locker doors a little more with your mind? That's all I remember now.
That's pretty much it. I remember lightning and lockers.
Uh-huh. And albinism.
He's, but yeah, well, and he has like alopecia, right? Because it's like no hair. Yeah, but I remember it was like early days of DVD. And at one point, he like lifts his arm. And I froze the DVD and zoomed in. And I saw like little stubble of armpit hair. I'm like, bullshit. Yeah. Unbelievable. Yeah, got I to do it here. Yeah.
Who didn't shave that guy's pits?
As a COVID project, I watched all the Fast and Furious movies.
I also cranked through them all again.
Did you?
But I genuinely like them. So when you say that this is a superhero movie, I also equate Dominic Toretto, yes, and the Fast movies as superhero films.
Increasingly
just
so.
With cars, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, especially as Ludacris is driving in space in like F9 or whatever.
So yeah, Too Fast, Too Furious came out in 03.
'03.
Uh-huh. Okay.
Paving the way for National Treasure.
Yes.
Yeah. Another aside, the titling for the Fast and Furious movies is hilarious because they go from The Fast and Furious to Too Fast, Too Furious. I think it's like The Fast and the Furious is
just one, Fast and Furious.
There's, yeah, Fast and Furious. There's like Furious, what is it? Fast Five. Fast Five. Oh, yeah. Furious 6 or 7 or something. Fate of the Furious. And then somehow, so there's like lack of consistency. And then some genius on Reddit, when the 10th movie was coming out, they're like, I sure as shit hope they call it Fast 10, your seatbelts. But they didn't.
That is a, like that is a real miss.
I know. Sorry about that. Okay.
Is it FUR10US? Because that's also a miss if they didn't get that.
That's a good question.
It is just Fast X.
Lame.